Hi, it's Karen Webster for payments.com, and I'm here today with Victor Ho, founder and CEO of Five Stars, which is a very interesting loyalty platform designed to serve small businesses. Hey, Victor, thanks for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to talk about a couple of things with you today, and what really prompted my interest in reaching out was the news that you just raised a pretty significant chunk of change, and you're obviously going to invest that, according to what I've read, into taking Five Stars to the next level. Before we talk about what that next level is, I'd like to get a peek inside the fundraising process. Was it hard? Was it easy? Was it different than your first fundraising adventure? Give me a little sense of what that was like.
Definitely. So I don't think fundraising is ever easy. It's always, you know, just by the sheer nature of how big of an event it is on your company. There's just always so many things to consider and a lot in the account. I mean, that being said, things came together quite quickly for us, which was really nice. Overall, it certainly was different from our previous round. So at the high level, when we were raising our seed round, early on, that's much more about just the idea and the team and the market side. And you're just kind of getting people excited about the concept of what you're doing. When you go to the Series A, at that point, it was proving for us, it was really proving that we had a product market fit. We had a good product that people really wanted, and the market was big and growing, and also that we had a core piece of technology that was really defensible. And so for us, we have a platform that basically integrates on any point of sale in the market, which is revolutionary because to date, you would have to go one by one to integrate with the APIs of 300 plus systems out there. And our technology enables us within 10 minutes to set up any point of sale, and we can do it completely remotely and very seamlessly. So that was kind of the core of our Series A, was proving that technology we could leverage to do something pretty groundbreaking, and we had a product market fit. And then we had some early traction numbers. The Series B this time around, a lot bigger of a round. So actually the pitch becomes completely different. Of course, you still have to outline the idea and the team and get people excited about the problem you're solving. But now it becomes a lot more brass tacks about what are the operational metrics of the business? How are things actually going? And is this really scalable? And so you have investors just kind of deep diving into our numbers. And overall, though, I was very pleasantly surprised with how the round came together, because kind of one of the pieces of advice you get is don't fundraise during August, because investors are all on vacation in August. I think it's a pretty nice career to have if you can kind of take a whole month and half of the year off regularly. But this is the whole industry seems to do that. So it was definitely nerve-wracking for me, because there were many times where I would be trying to get something scheduled or a conversation goes well and it's moving forward, but then you find out that half the partnership is in Europe somewhere, something like that, and you can't get the investment committee scheduled. So I think that was kind of the word of caution that I had gotten from others going into this timing, and one thing that was, you know, made things more nervous for me. But what ended up happening very fortunately was that at the same time, because we had a really good story, we had incredible growth, we've grown from nothing to a very big business with 150 people spanning 50 states in Canada within the last 2 years. It prompted people to actually try and close the deal before they left for vacation. So we had two opposing forces. So some investors, it was very difficult because they couldn't rally their team. But then the others that were here and about to leave, the ones that got very excited, it prompted them to kind of step in and aggressively close things out. And so it actually worked out well for us in the end.
Interesting. That's a great story. I want to ask you two clarifying questions. And you're in the loyalty space. And, you know, it's a space that feels a little squishy because there are lots of people in it and people come at it in very, very different ways. Very different ways of getting to market and distributing what that loyalty solution is. Is what investors got excited about the fact that you have this technology platform and integration with the point of sale that makes it easy for the business to actually take advantage of what you do?
That's definitely a big part of it. So actually, when you break the space out by how they approach things, it's not as crowded as it appears. When I entered the space, there were, I think, 60 other companies in the loyalty space. So this was beginning of 2011. I was leaving my old job at McKinsey and moving to Silicon Valley and joining Y Combinator. It felt like every other week I would read in some tech blog that another startup had launched in loyalty. And it was just kind of crazy. And it was either a mobile app or it would be an iPad solution or something else. But when we entered the market, since it was so crowded, the thesis was that, hey, if we need some core differentiator from all these guys, or else there's no use entering a market that's this saturated. But for us, fortunately, my background when I was at McKinsey and my co-founder, we built loyalty and customer engagement programs for a lot of Fortune 100 companies. So many of the biggest programs out there that folks are familiar with, we were directly involved in some way or another. And one of the core insights you learn coming from that is that loyalty programs in and of itself, just the rewards part, buy 10, get one free, get this discount, whatever it is, those are very powerful because they do drive a lot of customer stickiness and they do affect customer behavior. But the real meat on that bone is what you can do with all the data that comes from being able to now track those customers since signing into your loyalty program. And once you know what they're buying, what their behavior is, that then allows you to do so much more in terms of personalizing their experience, sending them targeted offers and promotions, getting them to refer friends, things like that. And that's where the real value comes from. So for us, when we entered the space, our insight was that there's all these other guys out there who are trying to get around the POS. And they're saying, hey, the POS is not relevant. This whole industry is really old, and we're just going to push out an iPad on the side or a mobile app or whatever it is. What we said was, hey, the point of sale is critical. These guys are the heartbeat of these businesses, and it's where all the data lies, where the real value comes from. So if we're going to enter this market, we need to be able to crack that. So ultimately, that's what we did. And today, that whole playing field has thinned down dramatically, where there's really only a small handful of funded players left that are in the space. And if you look at them, they all have very different approaches. For us, our offering is pretty much completely different from anyone else that you might find. And really, for us, we think that differentiation is a core piece of our success and why we are, you know, today, by good margin, the largest program on the market, and we're able to raise this round of funding.
That's great. There's been a lot of chatter in the Valley about burn rates and startups and, you know, getting out over their skis and spending too much money, you know, ahead of the real revenue. That doesn't sound like the business that you run. How are you able to run your business with a margin?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. It was a huge source of both focus and stress for us. So you hear a lot of the chatter today about burn rates, but that actually was the big thing for us 2 years ago. So I actually was just recently looking back at my board meeting slides from 2012, from mid-2012, and there was a series of slides that I presented to our board that basically said, look, we've got all these different loyalty players in the space who have raised a bunch of money and are spending it in a way that we don't think is sustainable. Now, as a result, we think we need to focus more on growing our margin, building a technology advantage, and getting our operating metrics to a place that is really scalable before we dump so much into building a big sales force. Now, that's one of the things that's kind of easy to say, but really hard to do, because at the same time, we have all these other players who are just dumping boatloads of cash into growing their sales team to really large sizes that you think their economics can't support. And every month I come to our board and they're saying, hey, you know, company X, they have this many stores now, and company Y has this many stores. You guys are falling behind, and we're reading all sorts of mouths from the tech press, yet I'm telling my management internally, look, this is unsustainable. If we will win, if we can spend our capital more wisely, and wisely for us means investing in technology while being disciplined about our growth, and 2 years later, it's going to pay off. And so that was a really hard thing to do for in the beginning, but really that's how we began to see the market evolve. And what's happened is it's now 2 years later, and virtually all of those folks are out of cash or had to raise, you know, or are struggling to raise follow-on rounds. And for us, we focused on technology. We built out a lot of really neat things we can do with the data we get from the point of sale, whether it's our CRM or our marketing automation tool. And now we're at a point where we are delivering materially more value to our merchants. So our average price point is about 3 times higher than the next closest player. And we are able to do it with no hardware costs because we're on the point of sale. And you can see how that might affect the business if you're someone who's a third the price and you have a bunch of hardware costs for your tablet or your iPhone, your mobile phone you're giving out or whatever it is. So that has been an important point of discipline. And I fully, fully agree with a lot of kind of the buzz that's out there today about burn rates and things like that. For us, it was a hard strategic decision we had to make that fortunately paid out.
Wow. So now I've read that you plan to take the money and take 5 stars to sort of the next level. It sounds to me like that next level is about execution and scale. Give us a look inside of what that really means on the ground with the 5 stars team. What are you going to do?
We're going to be entering an exciting period of growth, which is exciting and also difficult. But ultimately, what it means is that we are going to need to build up our loyalty consultant base. Our loyalty consultants are our sales reps, and we're just going to have to grow that team massively, with our goal being to really just saturate the country and be able to reach out to every small business owner who we believe we can help and we believe our product can drive value for. And ultimately, what drives our whole company, and without kind of taking too much of a sidetrack, the reason I left the finance and consulting world to live out of my garage without a paycheck and eat noodles and the whole deal is because I saw just what the insane amount of value loyalty and customer engagement drives for the Fortune 100. You know, the Starbucks of the world, the Macy's of the world, et cetera, they spend like an insane amount of money really fine-tuning these things. They have whole marketing departments just picking apart their customer base and looking at funnels and driving value. And when you look at kind of your corner coffee shop or the salon down the street, I just felt that they didn't have a chance. And you know, small businesses have been increasingly struggling relative to larger franchises. And my heart really went out for that. And so the goal was to try and democratize that technology and bring it to all the small businesses around the country. So when we think about our loyalty consultants, I don't really think about them as sales reps. They're trained not to hard close, not to just kind of push products, but really try to educate and inform a lot of these local merchants who are, you know, so kind of almost told by the press that like, oh, just run a daily deal or acquire more customers, that hey, actually, when you really look at it, building a successful business is all about retaining your existing customers and treating them better, and that will take you much further. And so that's kind of how I view this money and the sales force we're building, is to try and educate these local merchants about becoming more relational. And our mission statement as a company is turning transactions into relationships, because that's really kind of the missional component of why I wanted to do this.
So last question, Victor. There's been a gazillion developments in payments over the last couple of months, and it seems like September was so active with the Alibaba IPO and, of course, Apple Pay, and now the news of PayPal. How does any of that affect your business? I would imagine the merchants that you touch have a lot of questions about what to do. Does this refocus you in any way?
You know, that's kind of a funny question, because it actually illustrates the prior point I was making a little bit. So if you actually look at a lot of the things that are happening, you know, Apple Pay being a good example, those things are pretty much exclusively targeted towards your big box retailers. So Apple Pay, for example, works with NFC readers, and you need NFC, and they've just a couple of the largest major brands. For us, for our small businesses, most of them really are not going to be touched or affected by it for quite some time. That being said, you know, I think I'm very excited about a lot of those developments, and I think it's going to be really great. Overall, actually, I'm a big fan of the way Apple designed Apple Pay, and I think it's going to be really interesting. But I do think overall, the jury is still a bit out because, for example, for Apple, their approach was, hey, we're not going to collect any data at all. We're just going to be this kind of transaction layer. So a lot of the normal bolt-ons where you would think loyalty would fit in, it's not so clear how it does yet because they don't actually see how much money you spent, what you bought, other things you would need to work point. So I think for us, we're just keeping our eyes on the space very intently. It's still, we're going to have to see how it shakes out over the next couple of years before we know how it will affect us. But overall, our goal is really to just kind of keep our local merchants, the local merchants, on the cutting edge, and most of them are not going to be privy to kind of a lot of the things that are coming out right now.
Victor, how many merchants are part of your network?
So today we've got about 5,500 merchants and about 4 million or so cardholders.
Wow, that's pretty significant for a company that started 3 years ago.
Yeah, we've come a long way from my garage.
You've come a long way from. Hopefully, you're eating better now.
marginally better. but yeah, I mean, it's just been an incredible blessing, and I think it's just a real source of validation. You know, I mean, it's always nice to grow fast, but I think for us, it's just such a nice validation to know that businesses are really need what we're providing, and they're responding to kind of this call towards relational commerce and to loyalty.
Well, Victor, it was really great to catch up. Congratulations on a very successful fundraising round and what sounds like a very successful business. Thanks for giving us the benefit of your time, but also your wisdom in what it really takes to build a business that's sustainable. I think sometimes we overlook the difficult decisions that founders have to make when really trying to grow a business that has legs and is sustainable beyond, you know, the next round to pay off the bills that you didn't get to pay off the last time you raised money. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And it's always my pleasure when someone can learn from some of the pain that we went through.
Well, it sounds like a lot of pain, a lot of gain. So well done.
Hope so. Yeah, thanks again.
Thanks, Victor.